Welcome to the Go Hack Yourself podcast with Carly Marie. I'm Carly and I'm bringing something really special to you today. Earlier this year, I got to interview one of my most admired authors, someone who's made an enormous difference in my life, Alison Armstrong. She's the author of The Queen's Code and Keys to the Kingdom, two books that are written as fiction and but are very quite transformational in what they teach, in the concepts that they teach about men and women, about masculine and feminine energy, and about the dynamic between the two. I've got a divorce behind me, and I'm now in a blended family with a man who's nearly 20 years older than me. And it's been a ride. And I can tell you that what I've learned from Alison has been absolutely revolutionary to me. And so when she agreed to let me interview her, I was very excited. And I interviewed her in a Facebook live stream interview. And I've had one of my beautiful team chop down some of the best bits of the interview into a podcast episode for you. If you want to see the whole thing, come find it on Facebook. But if you're looking for the highlights, this is a really great little download for you. We kick off with Alison talking about the characters of the book and how they weren't necessarily based on real people, but they were based on kind of elements of her, and she related to different parts of them. So when she's talking about Kimberly and different people, she's talking about characters in the book. So if you have read the book, you'll find this really, really interesting. If you haven't, I think you'll still find it interesting, the actual concepts that she refers to. But if you haven't read the book, definitely read it. There's a review on this podcast. I've reviewed all my most favorite books on this podcast, the ones that have made the biggest difference in my life. So I would love to know what you think. I would love you to come and find me on Facebook. Just look up Carly Marie on Facebook and you'll find me. And if you search Carly Marie Ellison Armstrong on Facebook, you'll find the interview. So let's do this. I look forward to hearing what you think.
And I knew it was fiction and the story started writing itself. So in 1992, I most identified with Kimberly and Melissa because that's who I was. And I'd been both sides of that. Yeah. And then by the time I wrote Keys of the Kingdom, by the time it wrote itself, I identified with Karen. So I was published in 2003. So I was 42 when it came out of me. So I identified with Karen, and Kimberly and Melissa were younger, right? And then when the Queen's Code came through in 2010, I guess it was 2009, I was almost 50. And I sort of was in between Karen and Claudia. Now I just, they call me the godmother, and I very much identify with Claudia.
Okay, so the books are written as fiction, and this is one of the things I tell people. I'm like, it's like self-help in that it's going to help you, but it's written as fiction. I think some people, when I make sure they know that when I hand that to them, it's just going to feel like reading a story. You're going to get swept up in these characters, and then you're going to go like, I just learned so much in reading this book. When you said about reading the book, was it always really clear that it was going to be fiction, that that was how you were going to deliver this amazing message?
Well, originally it was going to be nonfiction, right? I was identifying all these characteristics about men and seeing why women were blind to them, right? We didn't naturally know this or distinguish this. And then it was 1992, and I was with my, at the time, she was going to be my, I didn't know it yet, but this was my future sister-in-law. And I'd already noticed this dynamic between her and Greg's other brother, and I was trying to help. I was trying to help because I was watching her emasculate him. I was watching her not admire him. I was watching all this friction, this competition between them, and I knew he was a king. And so I was trying to tell her about the stages of development, and she wasn't listening. She wasn't listening, wasn't listening, wasn't listening. And then I started telling her this story that I made up with a friend called The Princess and the Swamp Rat. And it's really a dating story. And so I started telling her about The Princess and the Swamp Rat. And all of a sudden, she was riveted, right? And we were shopping at an open, you know, 4th of July, right? Where they set up all the booths and we were shopping. And then her husband came to pick us up and she's like, shh, wait, wait, wait. Allison has to finish the story. Same thing happens, like our online curriculum. Our online curriculum was made by filming live workshops and then cutting them in with me interacting like this, in fact, from this studio. And when I was editing the live workshop footage to create the online curriculum, there were things that I call her that Allison. There were things that Allison was teaching that I didn't know. Yeah. So I'm watching the video of that Allison going, oh my gosh, that's true. I didn't know that. Wow, a man's sense of safety isn't just based on his productivity right now. It's how long has he been productive and how long into the future does he see himself being productive? And that's why a very successful man can be really depressed because his future is not filled with productivity. Oh my gosh.
Wow.
That just came out in the middle of teaching the class. And I didn't remember having said it or knowing it until I was editing the video. And my experience is it just pressed through me. Like it would not let up until it was fully articulated and sent out into the world. My prayer every time is just, God, thank you for having me be whatever you need me to be to get your work done.
The stages of development is so fascinating to me. I'm with a man who's 20 years older than me. So the man I was married to and the man I'm with now are in two different stages of development. And we often hear, particularly in the business world, we hear people kind of reference your work and talk about king, and we want to find our king and all of that. And so I guess I'd love to touch on that a little bit around the stage. What are the stages of development for that? I think a lot of people who are here right now have read The Queen's Code but haven't read The Keys to the Kingdom yet. I think some people don't know. I'm like, there's another one, you've got to read that one too. But I'd love to know, what are the most important things that you believe we need to know about men so the world can be better?
Well, may I talk about some things that aren't easily gotten just out of The Queen's Code or Keys to the Kingdom? Can I give out this stuff?
Yeah, because I know a lot of people watching here have definitely read The Queen's Code. Everyone's messaging me going, this is so exciting. Yeah, that would be amazing. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so one of the things that we've been watching, these are things that are really relevant. I have yet to meet a man who has any physical fear of the coronavirus. In fact, I've yet to meet a man who has any physical fear at all. Okay. It's just not part of the way that they're put together. And they are astonished at how much fear women have that's related to the physical. And so in our Understanding Women online course, that's the thing that we begin with. And if people want to know about that, right on the front of our website, they can click on the sample and just watch that scene from Understanding Women that opens up this whole thing that is the source of so much women's behavior. Yeah. And women's behavior is confusing to men because in what we called in The Queen's Code, masculine and feminine, we now call hunting mode and gathering mode. And because a lot of baggage got added, a lot of right and wrong got added to masculine and feminine, which I tried to plow through for years. And then I finally just gave up trying to recontextualize those. And so women, both women and men, can be in this mode that's created by having a specific goal or intention or destination in mind, and that creates a whole mindset and relationship to emotions and perception and information that's screened in and screened out, and the way we speak and listen, and even how we move our bodies. And then in gathering mode, which is open to options and possibilities and alternatives. And if you think about as a woman, when we're really shopping, right? We're not hunting for anything. We're just shopping. We're just going to the meadow and seeing what's there. Oh, what do they have today? Right. And that sense and that connectivity that it creates to everything. And we literally, our vision is different. Our hearing is different. How we process information is different. Our relationship to our emotions is different. Everything is different. And we move our bodies differently.
Yes.
And the thing that women and men don't know about women and men is that men are, they're always trying to do what works, right? They're organized around being effective. And we're confusing to them because what's effective when we're in gathering mode is not effective in hunting mode. And what's effective in hunting mode is not effective in gathering mode. And most men spend most of their time in hunting mode. So when we're in hunting mode, they can kind of sync up with us better. So at the work, in the workplace, we have the most chance of things going well when we're both in hunting mode. Okay. When they're in hunting mode and we're in gathering mode, we're glorious and mystifying and aggravating to them because nothing works. And then they might find something that works, like maybe they learned something from our old audio on, you know, Audible and iTunes has an Understanding Women audio from way back that's just about gathering mode. So they'll do something like that and it works, but then the next day it doesn't work. And they don't understand, why does something work part of the time? Right? Everything should work all of the time. And then what they don't know is that because of the effects of estrogen on the brain, a woman can not only can she shift from hunting mode and gathering mode and back in a couple seconds, not only that, but her external environment can shift her unwittingly, right? We fall in love with them when they're connective, right? And open and all right. So we fall in love with them then, but we fall in lust with them when they're in hunting mode. Yeah. If something's out of place, right? So imagine you go into your favorite meadow, your cave woman, and you go into your favorite meadow and something's out of place. Well, how the heck did it get out of place? Was there a bear here? Like, who was messing with my meadow? So things out of place actually cause tension in women, right? Because how'd it get that way? Was it a threat? Am I in danger, right? And so we're compelled to put things in place. We get upset at the people who left things out of place, right? Because it's this kind of shock to our nervous system. You know, the crooked pillow is talking to us. It's actually complaining about being crooked. Things that are dirty, things that are ugly, right? All these things are grating on us and sort of sapping our energy. And totally, so, yes. And so every little thing is gratifying. So the pillow being straightened is gratifying. Now it's quiet and peaceful and not causing any tension. The socks picked up off the floor, the laundry where the laundry belongs, right? The cushion, you know, when people sit on a couch and they get up and the cushion doesn't come back even? Mm-hmm. Just something as simple as that. So all these little things, the trash being taken out, the sink being scoured, the bed being made, all these things that have us feel like all's well in the world, every little thing makes a difference. And we see all of that, and then we see a man doing nothing. There's all these little things that need to be done, and he's doing nothing, right? And so women have been getting really upset. And men have been really upset and frustrated because there's nothing worth doing, right? Remember, there's nothing is worth doing, and there's nothing we're just doing. There's just all this picky, uni little stuff. There's just this I don't know if we can say this. There's just this little shit, right? How can it be worth doing? That's not worth doing. A woman would get up off the couch, walk across and straighten a pillow, you know, on a seat across from her. That's not worth doing to almost any man. So they're looking for big things to do. They want to conquer something. They want to kill something. They want to make something right. They want to solve a big problem. And most men are finding no big problems at home. There aren't any big problems at home. That's why they go to work in the first place, right? And so the challenge is, how do we bridge that, right? And how do we have little things add up to a big thing? And Derek Robbins, who's Tony Robbins' son, and who's loved my work for ages. We did an interview for his People about a month ago, and I just got the biggest tickle out of him because he had put this together in his relationship with his wife, that before he goes to bed, if he does all these little things, and he listed all these little things in the kitchen and in the living room that he does before he goes to bed, and they're worth doing it to him because they add up to, they equal in the morning, his wife is peaceful. She's peaceful and she's relaxed, right? She doesn't come out in the morning and go, she comes out in the morning and, you know. So he took all these little things and added it up to this big thing that's totally worth doing. And that's one of the things that we can do, or like we can change the way we communicate, right? That, you know, honey, is there anything you want me to do? Instead of, do these 10 little things. Well, the thing that would make the biggest difference for me, what I need from you the most, what would have the greatest impact is, right? At the end of the weekend, I would be the most happy if, right? So the most, the biggest, the greatest, because that's where they want to play. Something I've never written about was when my son was born in 1988. So before I started studying men, before I found out I was a front runner, I was really, really mad at his dad. I'd been in labor for gosh knows how many hours it was. It was almost I think it was 21 hours by the time Jeff was born. The Olympics were on. His dad was just watching the Olympics and completely missing the contractions and doing the part he had trained for. and I was so angry, right? And then he was tired, so he went home after Jeff was born. He like didn't ask for a bed and stay the night. He didn't want to make sure he had plenty of time holding his son. He just was tired and went home. And we never had a good marriage, but boy, that was a capper. And I was just mad. I was so mad at him. And so I made this promise to my son. I promised that I would raise him in a way that he would have brilliant relationships with women. This is what I told him. You know, this little infant in my arms, right? And at the time, what that meant was I was going to carve the man right out of him. Right? I was going to make sure he didn't grow up to be a typical man, right? He wasn't going to grow up to be anything like his father. Oh, angry, angry, angry. Hurt and angry. So hurt, so angry. And in the Queen's Code, when Kimberly talks about, you know, just being sure she didn't have the Princess Grace gene, that is definitely me. There was some, what was wrong with me that my husband didn't pay attention to me in all the ways that I wanted. So in 1991, 6 months after I started studying men, a beautiful woman, her name was Ellen Hurst, and she's the only woman who could have done this because she's the only woman whose life I envied, or the only woman whose life I wanted, right? She was powerful. She made a difference in the community. Her husband adored her. He was still courting her. They had two children, you know, who were early teens. She had a garden Oh my gosh, she had a garden. On top of everything else, she had a garden. Right? All these things. She had the have it all life, right? And she was the one who called me on emasculating men. She was the one who pointed out to me all the ways she'd seen me emasculate men. And she said, you even do it to Jeffrey. That's my son's name. You even do it to Jeffrey. And he was not quite three at the time. Yes. She pulled out the big guns, because as she was pointing out all the ways I emasculate men, I was like, oh yeah, I remember that. That was a good one. Oh yeah. That really worked. Right. I'm like, of course, this is what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to emasculate men. Oh yeah. And then when she said, I thought it was my job, my duty. You know, we don't want the world ruined by runaway testosterone. So I got to keep these guys in check. Talk about bring out the worst in them and then blame them for it, right? I was terrible. And studying men for 6 months, I'd just gotten worse. This is where I really was Melissa. The more I knew about them, the worse I was to them. The more effective my manipulations were, the more brutal my emasculations were. Oh my gosh, I set them up to just be chopped to pieces. I didn't know. I didn't know how hurt I was. I didn't know how angry I was. I didn't know how vulnerable they were, right? I thought they didn't have any feelings. They didn't have any souls. So what does it matter, right? Oh gosh, okay, I'm going to kind of gag myself right now. But when she said, I could see it. I could see that since he was born, I had literally been emasculating him. Everything male about him, everything powerful about him, everything focused and intentional and generative and independent, everything independent about him, I was just squashing. But Ellen got to me. Ellen got to me, and I gave it up. I just gave it up, period. I didn't even just give up the right. I just pledged to give it up and find a new way to live with men. And I was shocked. I was shocked because I thought if I learned how to bring out the best in them, that would be the key. But the moment I stopped emasculating them, how they related and related to me and behaved towards me and with me was better than I thought they would after I figured out how to bring out the best. You know, how I ended up teaching him to be brilliant with women was by learning everything I learned about women. And he was 17 when he did the Understanding Women course, right? And he's been through all our men's curriculum and being an extraordinary man. And, you know, he's done all of this stuff, right? And he knows how to provide and receive noble healing and noble forgiveness, and you know how to restore your honor, and he's brilliant with women, but it was not the way that I intended it when he was born.
But I'm not sure that people realize that you have all this online curriculum. So understandingmen.com is where they should head to find all of that.
Yeah. That'll work. Understandingmen.com will work just fine. And we have over 100 hours of online curriculum that we developed well in advance of current times. And it's multimedia right there. I mean, we're really intentional about it. And so there's film from live workshops, so you get to see a lot of reaction. There's me interacting just like this, setting up sections of the workshop, answering questions about it. There are, every session has all these different prompts that are optional that you can use to interact with the information. We have private Facebook groups for each of the courses. And then depending on which course you're in, I have live interactions. So like Understanding Men and Understanding Women, I spend 2 hours a month on conference calls. You don't have to be in the hot seat, right? When you're reading the books, you don't, you can cause as much separation as you need in order to feel safe to take in the information. Yeah. It's not in your face.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, it's a very sexy story.
Yeah, great story. Such a good story and such an easy read. You'll swallow it up in a weekend. And so to anyone who hasn't read it, my gosh, obviously you're going to now. So it's 10 o'clock. It's 10 o'clock in the morning here. It's something else where you are. But a huge thank you, of course. This has been a highlight to me. Your work has been extraordinary, as I said. And I look forward into diving into more and more of your work. And I'm sure a lot of people watching here will as well. So thank you so much.
Yeah, let's do it again sometime.